An international conference to study, promote, and renew the appreciation of liturgical formation and celebration and its foundation for the mission of the Church is taking place here in Rome this week. The four-day event, organized by Bishop Ray, is one of the initiatives for the Year of Faith, commemorating 50 years since the opening of the Second Vatican Council. Among the speakers at the event is Jeffrey Tucker, editor of the New Liturgical Movement blog. He spoke with Christopher Wells about the role of the interest in bringing liturgical music into the modern world.
Sometimes people can feel isolated in their parish environments because it's the only liturgical experience they have. So part of the role of the New Liturgical Movement is to broaden people's perspective and give them an idea of what's going on outside their parishes and to kind of inspire an idealism. On the part of priests and laity, and my particular passion is for musicians. So we show what kind of music belongs in the Roman Rite and what is really possible and inspire them to undertake the difficult disciplines that are associated with learning Gregorian chant and taking on those kind of big projects. And that's what the New Liturgical Movement does.
And you're here at the Sacra Liturgia Conference. You're giving a talk, I believe, on Friday. Can you tell us a little bit about what you'll be talking about?
Yes, I'll be talking about the role of the Internet and the promotion of good liturgy and sacred music in particular. And my thesis is that the role has been immense. Because about 6 years ago, we put the first editions of Gregorian chant online. Before then, it was actually difficult to find out much information at all about music in the Roman Rite. So we put all the liturgical music that was already in the public domain, we put it online and made it for free download. And that led to a very interesting thing. It led to a remixing and the creation of derivative works. And that's, we know about this from the software world. You know, somebody comes out with a beta version, you know, and then people take it and remix it and reuse it and repurpose the music or the video or the code, whatever. And so in the world of music, Gregorian chant is the code, essentially. And for something like 100 years, it was held under copyright until we released it into the commons. And that just inspired a whole generation of musicians to take it. They created apps. Now you can download all the Gregorian chant on these applications for the Android or the iPhone or anything else. But more importantly and more substantially, the music itself was taken and vernacularized. So after 50 years of struggle and confusion, we suddenly have coherence and clarity now. And we have the music now to sing with the ordinary form of the Mass, whereas before it wasn't really clear.
And that was one of the reforms of the Vatican Council, where it wanted to get the music on a more popular level.
Well, you know, it's funny because when you read the documents of the Second Vatican Council, it says Gregorian chant, pride of place. This is the first place at Mass. And then you look at the results, and it didn't happen at all. And people get, you know, there's lots of conspiracy theories about this. You know, how did this happen? Well, actually, if you look back at it, you can see the problem was essentially the Gregorian chant was Latin music. I mean, the melodies of chant flow out of the language. And so it's all bound up together. So at the same time, the Second Vatican Council said Gregorian chant deserves pride of place. It also gave permission for vernacular liturgy. And so the vernacular took over. Then there was confusion. This was 1963, and it was another, you know, 8 years before the new Mass came out with a new calendar, which reordered all the propers of the Mass. So you had 8 years, really, of confusion. Then the new Mass comes out. By that time, there, you know, it came out in the middle of a big cultural revolution. There was a great deal of experimentation going on with the music, you know, adding folk music and popular hymnody and these sorts of things. So by the time the new Mass came out, Gregorian chant was, in effect, already dead. The calendar was reorganized, the propers of the Mass reshuffled. The Graduale Romanum that pertains to the ordinary form of the Mass didn't even appear until 1974. So all these years later, there's just been nothing but confusion, really. And we got into some very bad habits with regard to the music. And essentially, the real true music of the Roman Rite was almost entirely lost. But now at this very late date, now that the music is in the commons and people can repurpose it and recreate it and remix it, we see the emergence now for the first time of vernacular chant that's based on Gregorian themes. And that's only been in the last 24 months, but what a difference it's made, because now musicians can walk into Mass with books that tell them what to sing and what's really appropriate.
Now, for people who don't know a great deal about music, can you tell us a little bit, what does it mean to say that Gregorian is really the Mass, the music of the Roman Rite? Talk a little bit about the role of music in the liturgy. A lot of people will just say, you know, we go to Mass and they're going to sing some songs. How does music fit into the celebration of the liturgy?
Well, what you just described is the normal experience. You go to Mass and you hear the priest says one thing, and then the choir sings something completely different. And it's always something of a surprise. And priests get a little bit annoyed by this because they never know what the entrance is going to be. You know, but in the history of the Roman Rite, that's not really the way it should be. The music is not extraneous. Rather, it is integral. It flows out of the text of the Mass itself. You know, if you look at the names of Masses, like we know Gaudete Sunday, Laetare, we know about Requiem, we know about these things. Those words are actually the first words of the introit of the Mass. And every Sunday throughout the year has an assigned specific introit text and therefore song that goes along with it. And so if you're just singing some hymn and not singing the proper of the Mass, then you're really not singing the Mass at all. You're just singing something else. And so that's why we're in the habit of thinking of the musicians as being extraneous. So part of the goal of the Church Musical Association of America that I'm associated with, and the new liturgical movement, and this whole kind of reform of the reform, is to bring together the music and the liturgy itself, so that you have a greater integration between the loft and the sanctuary, essentially. They should be working as partners together with the people.
With this conference especially, there's a focus on the 50th anniversary. It's in the year of faith. So we're talking about the 50th anniversary of the Vatican Council, and you mentioned that a little bit. But there's also the idea of the new evangelization, with liturgy as a part of the mission of the Church. How does music in the liturgy fit into that idea of being part of the Church's missionary and evangelical duty?
Well, these days, quite often you hear people blame musicians for all the things that are wrong with the Mass. And, you know, in some sense, they do bear some responsibility. But mostly what they're doing wrong is not because they have sort of bad intentions. It's just because they just don't know. They don't know that the Mass has music already embedded within it. And that's a little bit surprising. If you look at a liturgical book like the Grotto alla Romana, musicians are shocked to discover that for every Sunday there is an appointed entrance, an appointed offertory, so that offertory isn't just the, you know, Coke and popcorn intermission of the Mass. I mean, it's actually a liturgical moment with a really assigned chant, and the communion, the same thing, and then the responsorial psalm, which is a kind of an updated version of what used to be called the Grotto Alla, was one assigned for every Sunday, and an Alleluia. So a really good church musician should have the Grotto Alla Romana really in his or her hands every week to sing it, at least understand what the ideal should be. And from there, you can adapt, you know, but you shouldn't really be replacing the text. You can learn about this by reading the general instruction on the Roman Missal. The problem is that a lot of musicians read that general instruction, they can't even understand what it means. When it says things like, now it's time to sing the offertory chant, a typical musician in a parishioner environment today will say, well, I don't know anything about that. I've never heard of an offertory chant or a communion chant. Well, what is that? What is that? Here I am, Lord? You know, I mean, people don't really know, or the entrance is always gather us in, or something like that. So I guess my point is really that we have a lot of education to do. So we hold conferences throughout the year for the purposes of training musicians in what is the musical structure of the Roman Rite, which is always a surprise to them. They don't really know. They don't really know what that structure, and priests don't entirely understand it either. And then we also try to explain to them how they can accomplish this great goal, which does require training. It's not like normal music. You know, you can go to music school. You can even finish your PhD studies in music school and not be able to sing for Mass, because it's a specialized form of music. And it's so specialized that, you know, it's the kind of music you hear it and you go, what does it make you think of? It makes you think of church. It makes you think of faith. It makes you think of beautiful things. So it's completely different from secular music, and that requires special knowledge and special training. But it's a responsibility the church needs to undertake, is to train musicians to do it the right way.
And then, as you said, there are a lot of musicians, a lot of priests who are maybe not really familiar with it. Certainly the people aren't. How do people respond when you try to bring this into the daily life of the parish?
Well, sometimes the transition has to be slow and methodical and, how do they say, pastoral. But you know who's especially responsive to it are young people, especially young musicians. In the United States, we have a big movement called Praise and Worship, you know, where they sing what seems to me, to my ears, just sounds like sort of dated pop music, you know, for the Mass. But I love nothing better than the challenge of going to a group like this and saying, you know, look, here's a way you can sing the actual text of the Mass and do it without instruments, with using your own voice. And you can be more important than you knew to the experience of the liturgy. And they always just love the challenge. Young people like taking it on because it's a big responsibility and it does stretch their talents, you know. And so they respond to it very well. Older people are probably less responsive. But I just personally can't really imagine a parish environment that, if given the chance, wouldn't feel a sense of having been upgraded once the chants are introduced into the Mass. I don't think it's so much a matter of ideological resistance. I really do think it is a matter of pedagogy that we need and just kind of a more pastoral teaching that needs to take place. Once you hear chant, whether in the Latin or the vernacular, in its proper liturgical context, you feel it, you sense it. The whole structure of liturgy becomes one long extended prayer. And prayer is all the more wonderful when it's sung. So it's a beautiful thing. It's just, it's a matter of trying it, training yourself, and gradually introducing it into the parish environment. And I'm very confident that we're going to accomplish this goal if we have enough time.
And returning to your current work with the new liturgical movement on the internet, can you tell us about the ways that the church and people like yourself are using the new means of social communication? You already talked about this a little bit, but how do we use the new media to move this goal forward?
The internet is a magical thing in some ways because anything that appears on it becomes malleable, it becomes universal, and the internet is a giant copy machine, essentially. That's all it is. So, and it becomes almost immortal in the sense that, you know, whatever we put up there is probably going to outlast our own lives. So if you can put out there a chant and invite people to download it, or a YouTube of a chant that's displaying both notes and playing a recording from, say, the 1930s, or maybe it's a fresh recording just now made, you have the perfect teaching tool, the perfect tool for distribution. We like to publish everything into the commons, which is to say that we don't claim any proprietary ownership over everything. And on the contrary, we want everybody to download as much as possible and use it in their parishes. So they can really achieve that universality that that has always been spoken about with regard to sacred music. It should be universal music, so the distribution of it should be universal. So the internet is very interesting in the sense that it's this, you know, sort of high tech, you know, postmodern institution, but it's the perfect medium for delivering this ancient music that has a longer history than any existing state on the planet. You know, it dates back essentially to the 5th and 6th century, and some of it all the way back to the apostolic age and before. So I enjoy the irony every day that, you know, I'm working on the blogs and working on musicasacra.com and other sites to achieve this universal distribution of this ancient music. And, you know, the combination of the old and the new, you know, it's almost religious in a way.
And a final question, your blog is called New Liturgical Movement, and there's been talk of that at this conference as well. What does it mean to have a liturgical movement, and what does it mean to have a new liturgical movement?
Okay, well, the original liturgical movement began in the 19th century. I mean, it was a hope that the liturgy would belong to the people to a greater extent than had become common at the time, so that people could follow the prayers, follow what was going on the altar, and were really actively involved in the liturgy. So the Mass and the liturgy of the hours, generally, would become part of the life of all Catholics, not just a kind of a belong to the clerical class only. So, in some ways, Vatican II was a fulfillment of this ambition. But, you know, as I said earlier, things kind of got a little confused after the council. It mixed up in some ways because of the introduction of the vernacular, which I think is a good thing. But sometimes you look back and you wonder how much did people think about the implementation? You know, a lot of things went wrong. Maybe it's bad timing. I don't know. But it's all the past. The point of the new liturgical movement is we're trying to refire up those original ideals that we can have a Roman rite said with integrity, sobriety, and clarity, and you know, a beauty above all else in the 21st century. So that's the idea.
Perfect. Anything else you'd like to add this afternoon?
Well, I just would add that I think our movement is not really about the past, really. It's about a beautiful future more than anything else. And I see this future unfolding every day in my work. You know, just as I said, in the last 24 months, we now have books that are available for people to pick up and sing at Mass. We have books of the Psalms now, which are new, you know, in the vernacular that are borrowing from Gregorian chant. To me, this is a forward-looking agenda. We're not interested in recreating anything that happened in the 30s or the 40s or 50s. I don't even know what happened in those times. I wasn't around. The point is that we're seeing progress in our times right now. I'm ready to leave the past behind and move on to a brilliant future so that we can achieve that original goal of the 19th century liturgical movement and the goals of the Second Vatican Council. They are achievable. We have a new missal out, we have new music out, we have a new generation anxious to bring it all together and make it happen in every single parish. And 5 years ago, I wouldn't believe the progress that we're seeing today. What's it going to be like 5 years from now? It's very inspiring.